Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome aboard. It is the Indie Myth Arc Week Show here on VCR. We together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. In fact, I think today's guest could probably cover all those bases, and then some. We'll get to her in a moment. I hope you're doing well on this rainy, at least on the East Coast, Friday. Please do take it easy out there. And if you'd like to join us, if you're listening live, 347-857-4505 is the number that gets you into the show. We'll take some calls a bit later. Check our mailbag, and I've got an interesting challenge for the Journal of Challengers all coming up a bit later on. But first, though, I want you to meet my guest. You know, I've talked about her for the past several weeks. In fact, I stumbled upon Tanya Grossinger in the most serendipitous way, coming out of driving home from seeing 42, the wonderful Jackie Robinson movie, and I turn on the radio and I'm stumbled into this mid-interview that Tanya was giving. I believe it was on WFUV radio, I think a sports talk show that they have on the weekends, and she was talking about her relationship with Jackie Robinson, and I was fascinated. As a young girl, she actually forged a friendship with Jackie Robinson, whom she met at the Grossinger Hotel, where she grew up in the heyday of that Catskills Resort, famed Catskills Resort in the late 40s and 50s, and she's written this fabulous new memoir called Memoir of an Independent Woman, An Unconventional Life Well Lived. Tanya Grossinger, it is a pleasure to invite you to join us on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
It's a fascinating book. I thoroughly enjoyed it, I will say. Full disclosure, I couldn't finish the entire thing, but I read most of it, and I certainly read the ending as you instructed. It's just, I'm going to go back and finish it. I can't always say that about every book because I get so many books to read, but it's so well told. It really is your life story. Nobody will be disappointed here. If you want anecdotes about everybody from all the famed performers, from Eddie Fisher to Buddy Hackett, Jerry Lewis, that you encountered when you were a child, as we said, Jackie Robinson, who we'll talk more about in a moment, then you had a very colorful life following your experience at Grossinger's. And, of course, you have all the back behind-the-scenes intrigue of the hotel life and your family life thrown in. And then later, you know, you became the celebrity publicist and writer and worked with a whole who's who of people, everybody from Johnny Carson to Betty Friedan and Hugh Hefner, often on the same day, those two, which is interesting. And Ayn Rand, you name it, you knew them and you dealt with them and you talk about it in such a colorful, interesting way and a loving way, too. And we'll talk more about that. So it's a fabulous memoir. I really do recommend it. And great personal insight. It's
Thank you so much.
No, it's really true. You put yourself out there, and as someone who works with writers and is a writer myself, I always say, you know, you put your story out there, it takes such courage if you're telling the truth, and you really just, you put it all out there, that's for sure. And you do it in such a compelling and entertaining way. Now, you start the book, we should say, you frame it in a way, which is why it was so important for me to read the ending, and I get it, as a letter to your imagined daughter, Natasha. Tell us why, you know, tell me how Natasha came about, and tell us how you started to think of your book in this way.
Sure. Well, I knew growing up at Grossinger's was a memoir that took me up until the year 1975, but I had such an interesting life after that. And one day I came up with a title, Letters to the Child I Never Had. And I thought this would be an interesting concept to be able to share some of the experiences I had post-Grossinger's with somebody who perhaps had it been a real-life daughter, I would be talking, you know, sharing my life with. It turns out that for business reasons, Skyhorse Publishing felt that I would get a greater audience if I broadened the title. So we got, because there's more to the book than my decision to be childless by choice.
Yes.
And
definitely.
So that's where Memoir of an Independent Woman, which is true, and An Unconventional Life Well Lived, which is also true. It's a mouthful, I have to admit.
That's right. It is a mouthful, but you know, but it does say it. It does say it. Now,
it's
Natasha
digestible.
Was Natasha. Yeah. What'd you say?
I said it's digestible.
It's digestible. Yes. It's digestible. That's right. I got it.
The name Natasha came to me out of the blue. There is no one. I think I write that in the book in the beginning.
Yes.
I didn't know a Natasha. It wasn't named after a favorite relative. I just always felt that the word was like proud, strong, Natasha. And I decided I fell in love with the title. And since it's my child, I can name it anything I want.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. Now, you have a very, and you're very honest, and it must have been heartbreaking in some ways to write this, and cathartic in others, I guess, to talk about your relationship with your own mother, which was a difficult one. You know, you had a very unusual childhood, that's for sure, and an unfortunate beginning to your life in the sense that your dad died, your father died when you were a baby. So talk
when
a little bit about that.
When I was 6 months old. But, you see, you know, I had, I think that probably much of what led me, or how I ended up leading an unusual life, was because I had a very unusual mother. And I think that that, for better and worse, opened me up to emotional experiences that perhaps had I grown up in a so-called normal way. I don't think there is such a thing as normal.
Exactly.
The three words I think that do not exist in the English language are always, never, and normal.
Yeah, that's a good way. You're right. What is normal? Define normal. Exactly.
That's right. I mean, normal
for me is different than normal for you. Exactly.
Right. Normal is dysfunctional.
Exactly. And dysfunction is different, but dysfunction is unique in the way you have your dysfunction is different. So, yeah,
exactly.
It's unique to itself. So, yeah, exactly. You're right. I mean, people, everybody, and that's why it's also such a beautiful book, because people can relate to so much, I think, in the personal struggles that you went through. You're so honest about growing up and throughout your life and trying to find yourself, be who you, you know, be honest with yourself and comfortable with yourself. And on the outside, you were very comfortable with yourself. And that's also very intriguing to me as a fiction writer, because it's always what lies beneath. And you do this with a lot of the celebrities that you talk about, too. It's not just name-dropping and anecdotes. It's, you know, it's not like going on the Joe Franklin show, which, by the way, is a lot of fun, too. No, nothing against the
I
Joe Franklin show.
I did many times.
I'm sure you did, right?
But with, this was the kind of show in the days gone by where you wrote the questions you wanted to have asked and give it to the person. And the problem with that is if by answering question four you've also answered question seven, they will still ask you question seven.
There's no ad-libbing. There's no – yeah. There's
no.
When people try to do that to me, when they say, well, we'll send you questions, sometimes they do that. Publishers are like, so you don't have to do that. I can ask my own questions. I'm okay.
Well, you know, I will tell you something. As a PR person, I surely, when I was doing PR for Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, I did send questions. Because
you did a lot for her.
I did. Yes, I did.
We're going to talk about that.
No, but let me say that with all humility. She did a lot for me. I will tell you, I've done PR for many people, famous and some who wish to be famous. Rarely did anybody thank me, and never did anyone thank me the way Betty did. There was an organization called the Society of Magazine Writers, which is now the American Society of Journalists and Authors. And members, she was, I wasn't, could bring a guest. Every time there was a meeting, the guest was introduced, and she would say, my guest is Tanya Grossinger. Tanya Grossinger is a publicist. If it wasn't for Tanya Grossinger, no one would ever have heard of The Feminine Mystique.
That's right. You do talk about that in the book. That was a nice gesture. But she was quite a character, because you had your her publisher wanted to kind of unload her in terms of the publicity,
exactly.
And that's how you got involved with her, and you
exactly.
helped her. You gave her media teacher. I like the way you describe her at the beginning, where you say she wasn't exactly considered attractive, and if people know, you know, what she looked like, they would understand. But besides that, she was very abrasive. She kind of thought she knew everything. There was one hilarious anecdote that
She was difficult. She was difficult. There's no question about it. And I had had difficult people to deal with before. But she was passionate in her being difficult. In other words, it wasn't ego for Betty Friedan to be her. It was a feminine mystique. She was so passionate about what she was doing that I felt, well, look, you know, give her a shot. Help her get a shot. Not give. It's not mine to give. It's to help.
Yes, and you definitely helped her. There was one problem. You had a little, very funny anecdote when she had a drink at Sardi's before going over to do the Virginia Graham show. I guess it was called Girl Talk. That's, for those of us who are too young to remember, the precursor to The View, right, I guess, in those days?
Well no, because, yes. Actually, you're right. I didn't think of it that way, yes. Can I tell the anecdote?
Yeah, please do.
Oh. The hostess, Virginia Graham, was somebody I knew from my days at Grossinger's. Now, I mistakenly thought she would be the best person for Betty to go on her show for the first time, because Virginia would be courteous. I was so wrong, because in Virginia's head, Virginia was thinking, if all my audience, who are the stay-at-home moms, go back to work, no one's going to watch me.
That's right. And oh, so there, she was threatened, yes.
Yeah, and there was this immediate animosity. It was a bi-level animosity. Betty got so angry at one point because, and also Betty talking about my life, maybe you're getting around, and she was not easy to listen to. I must say this is not to defend her. She was really impossible. Anyway, at one point there was a commercial break. And for your listeners to know how long ago this happened, you will understand for the moment, in a moment. She ended up saying to the studio audience, this was not on camera, Virginia, if you don't let me have my say, I'm going to say the word orgasm on television 10 times. I'm laughing now. I was not laughing then.
Oh, I'm sure not. Yeah.
But I said to Virginia, look, and she threatened she'll never use a guest of mine again, and she was really angry. And there were 10 minutes left for the telecast. I said, she wanted to, you know, kick her off. I said, let her go. Let everybody go. Let everybody talk at once. It's going to be the best show you ever had. And, in fact, when the show went into reruns, it was the single most rerun show because of that.
Wow. Now, do they still have – I imagine it's sort of like what people think of the big feud that Rosie O'Donnell had with Elizabeth Hasselbeck a few years ago, if you remember that on The View.
Yes, I do.
That, of course, we have on YouTube. Do they still have copies of this, or is that show, like, long lost?
I haven't the vaguest idea. I imagine somewhere – no, that's an interesting question. In some archive, some –
You should have somebody put that on YouTube for as promotion for your book, because it'll get so many hits, it'll draw attention to your book.
That's a very interesting idea, and I thank you for that. The producer is dead. I can't. Anyway, I'm going to check it out. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, because that would be fabulous to see, the way you describe it, and you describe it was in such vibrancy.
Oh,
you
know, believe me, it was much more exciting than the way I'm describing it. I'm going to do that, yeah.
Yeah,
okay, what is your next idea for me to get inside your show and YouTube? I'll take it.
I'll see what we can do. Well, get yourself on The View. Certainly, you know Barbara Walters, right?
Yes, but I'm not sure. You know, I'm not sure if they'll put me on. I know that the show has the book.
Oh, okay.
And I think that this is the kind of show that the book will have to be important, and then they will put me on. They will not put me on to make the book important.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying.
That's the way media works these days.
Yeah. But the importance of this book is that it's such a personal story. You have so much, and you do have the anecdotes, which are great and fun, which is obviously a selling point, but you also have such great personal insight into your life and your personal growth and your challenges with your family. And I kind of feel like an outsider at Grossinger's, because we should say that your mom was the in-law. Your in-law.
Well, a cousin by marriage.
Yeah. And, by marriage, right. Okay.
And this, the hotel was owned, it was a husband and wife two first cousins got married. So they were all Grossinger's.
Ah, so that was very inbred.
And I was the second cousin, that sort of, you said it, I didn't. And, I wasn't a Grossinger in the sense that I didn't own the hotel. My mother was a European woman, very well educated, spoke 13 languages. The hotel was really trying to expand to get an international clientele, and she was perfect for the role she played. But it was still not a Grossinger, and as a child, I was pretty much I was made to feel like an outsider. But because of that, I got to Jackie Robinson, so you see.
Exactly, yes. Now, talk about that. You have a very interesting story and a very unique relationship with Jackie Robinson, whom you met when you were about 13, 14, right?
I was 13. In fact, I'm not sure if you – oh, of course, you know, you heard the interview. I have a children's book out, and it's called Jackie and Me, A Very Special Friendship. It's beautifully illustrated. It's for children 5 to 8. But I've discovered, to my great joy, that the parents are enjoying it more than the kids.
There you go.
So don't feel that if you don't have a 5 to 8-year-old, the book is not for you. Yes, it is.
In the book, the premise there is what? To talk about adversity?
It is my closeness to Jackie and what I learned from him. I learned, for example, the one anecdote that is in both the Grossinger book, the Jackie book, and in Memoir of an Independent Woman. When at a certain point Jackie met me, I met him at Grossinger's. The very day we met, someone explained I was a very good ping pong player. So he said, I'd love to play a game. I'll meet you at 4 o'clock in the ping pong room. And I said, sure. And I said to myself, yeah, right. I mean, I knew enough celebrities. You can't, you know, they're just saying things to sound good. So I didn't show up.
Ah.
And then he called me, and I was there 2 seconds later. And afterwards, we had a, you know, had a Coke, and he said, why, did I misunderstand? And he said, didn't we have a date? And I said, yeah, but I didn't think he would show up. And I explained why. And he said, aren't you a bit too young to be so cynical? And I sort of blubbered my way through, you know, well, I wasn't. Whatever it was, he decided he liked me, and he asked some questions about me. And when he came up the next time, he looked for me, and we went for a walk. We started to talk. One day, I'm pouring my heart out to this guy, and I cannot believe I really said this, but I really did. I said, Jackie, I don't know if you understand what it's really like to be on the outside looking in. I said this to Jackie Robinson.
Ouch. So what was his
response? God did not strike me dead. And and he just took my hand and put it in his and looked at me with his big smile and very softly said, yes, dear, I think I do.
What a beautiful story, and what a beautiful moment. You know, and he understood. I mean, he didn't lash out at you or anything.
He didn't know.
He knew how to respond to a young girl. He saw that.
And he used to write to me. When I was in college, I went to Brandeis when I was 15, and he used to write letters to me, and, you know, we were up here, and we missed you so much, and how you're doing, and I know everyone expects great things. I expect great things from you. And I would cut these little lines out and put them in my wallet. I was an insecure kid, as you can gather from this conversation. And I would walk around. If I really felt bad, I would open my wallet and read the lines and then say, if Jackie Robinson likes me, there must be something good about me. So he really was important in my life. And what I learned from him and what I write about in the book, the two things that he taught me, one, never be ashamed of who you are. That's what makes you special. And two, never, ever give up. And this is the lesson that through him I want children to understand. And it wouldn't be so terrible if some adults remember it also.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's a great lesson to learn early, but if you missed it, it's never too late. Yeah. Exactly. What a beautiful, beautiful life lessons. And you have a lot of them in your memoir, too, that you talk about in your letters to Natasha, about your own exploration in your life. And as you said, your complicated relationship with your mother and the family, and Jenny Grossinger, who I guess was the grande dame of the hotel, so your mother could never be called Mrs. Grossinger, right?
Right. And, you know, but I learned from that. I learned from all of these experiences. I was a bright kid. I was a precocious kid. I read a lot as a kid. And this was my salvation. It really was. And I liked intrigue because the hotel was full of intrigue. So I always knew what was going on behind the scenes, and that was fun. Still is, actually.
Like house detective, figure out what's going on with who, who's doing what. You know, so. Your living conditions were kind of startling to me, that you didn't really have.
They certainly weren't
luxurious, let's put it that way.
No, well, I shared a very tiny guest room with my mother, and then when the hotel was overbooked, which happened on certain holidays, they would put a bed in and put a guest in. And we didn't even have a private bathroom. It was shared with a room across this very tiny hall. But, you know, so now I have a bathroom.
Now you have your own. Now you have a room.
The first thing I went to when I rented an apartment, does it have a bathroom? Okay, it's mine.
But you would think that you would. They would. I guess it was so crowded they couldn't. You would imagine living at a hotel. You would have a nice room at least. You know?
Well, I imagined a lot of things, but you know, just because you want it doesn't make it so. That's another life lesson I learned.
That is another life lesson, exactly. And nothing is perfect. Nobody is perfect. I think that's also part of it. That we're all. Everybody's doing what they can do. Not everybody's doing their best, but most of us are trying.
You do. I was fortunate in that I developed a talent for public relations and then subsequently a talent for writing. and I was able to take what I learned as, you know, as emotionally and express myself in a way that seemed to resonate with people who read what I was saying.
You sure did, yeah, and you sure, and certainly being at the hotel and mingling with all those people, I guess, made you very adaptable, too, to a lot of situations and people. You were very comfortable at a young age.
I was very comfortable. You know, it's interesting because some of the other I didn't grow up alone. There were other kids who grew up, and I can think of one particular who couldn't acclimate to other people because it was just too many people. You know,
Overload.
I mean, there were times I would just go away from them, even if not physically, emotionally. I would just climb into myself because I didn't want everybody there.
You had no privacy, really.
But I also had no choice.
And you had no choice, right?
Let's call it a spade. I acted out at times. I wasn't the perfect kid. I wasn't the perfect adult. But I was a decent kid, and I'm a decent adult. And I think at this point in my life, I'm grateful for that accomplishment.
Well, you do talk about also, it's interesting that how you were reluctant at certain points to be involved with certain people in business because you didn't like the way they practice business.
Exactly.
You were a PR person. You knew some of the people behind the scenes were not up and up, and
exactly.
You were always, I have to live by my own standards, and that got you
exactly.
into some hot water sometimes.
Yeah, I did that, and that I never regretted. I turned down accounts. As a travel writer, at times people tried to influence me if they were inviting me to come to their property to see it, and then if they expected that in return that I would say only positive things, and I didn't operate that way. So I learned to say to anybody who invited me, I appreciate your invitation, and I would like to take advantage of it. However, I call it as I see it, and if that is going to be a problem for you, perhaps you should invite somebody else. And I paid the price once in a while. Sometimes an editor would say to me, this person advertises, I don't want anything negative in the article. I said, then you don't want me to write the article. That's all.
Right.
I mean, no problem. I wasn't going to sweat things. Don't sweat the small stuff.
Right. Talk a little bit about, now you do have your romantic entanglements were kind of interesting, too. You had one very brief troubled marriage. You married very young and probably, as you say in the book, ill-advised to have gone forward that fast with someone who you really didn't know. And you had some regrets around that and some guilt around that. And then you did have a very long, loving relationship, though, with a man, unfortunately, he turned out to be married.
I lost a long-lasting love with a man who was married. It didn't turn out he was married. I didn't discover it at a point where I was too deeply involved. I knew he was married. I do not hold myself up as the poster child for love with a married man. This is a book about one woman, me, Tanya Grossinger, and one man, the gentleman who I was in love with, and our particular situation. I'd gotten some feedback, and someone has said to me, I have no morals, or blah, blah, blah. And I would say, you're judging when you don't know anything about me, him, his situation, my situation. And I stand behind what I found the right person for me, and to my knowledge, no one was hurt by it. I never wanted to remarry after that. I had made a decision, one, I wasn't going to be married again. Two, I knew I wasn't going to have children, and I was affected so much by my mother's relationship with me. And I was afraid. I didn't want to turn it, what is that cliche, mirror, mirror on the wall, I am my mother after all. I didn't want that. So I made that decision. And it was, we make as adults or semi-adults decisions. And I made a decision not to have a child. I made a decision to spend 25, 30 years with a man who is married. And I don't regret it either.
You're very honest about that relationship, too, and his situation, his complications, although you do say you're not sure if at one point you didn't really – did you really talk to him about whether he would get divorced? You explain why his family he wasn't planning on getting divorced, and I don't think him to.
I wouldn't have. As we got older and – been together 20 years, 25 years. One night, he said, do you mean to tell me? Because I told him, I'm not going to break up your marriage. I don't want to marry you. I don't want to be married to anyone. I love you, but I don't want to be married to anybody. And he just so sweet. He said, you mean to tell me you really didn't want to marry me? And I said, yes, dear, I really didn't want to marry you. I wanted to love you. I wanted to be loved by you, but I didn't want to marry you. So it wasn't it was never a problem for me. It never entered my mind. I would never have done, besides there were certain personal situations, which I do go into in the book, that he wasn't going to leave his wife, which I'm very good, because I wasn't going to take him.
don't you leave your wife on my account because I don't want you. Yeah, I got you. But
did it make it? I really didn't. Did it what?
Did actually the fact that you didn't want to get remarried and that he was married, did that help you in the relationship in a weird way? Because if he wasn't married, if he was free and clear,
I'm sure.
Do you think it wouldn't have continued?
I don't know. Well, if I really wanted to get married, and because of his personal situation within his family, he wasn't going to leave his wife, then I would have been a very unhappy person. I would have left the relationship. Or he would have left the relationship.
No, but I mean, because he was married and he wasn't going to leave his relationship and you didn't want to get remarried, that helped you continue the relationship with him. Had he been free and clear, do you think that you would have had the relationship as long as
I see what you're saying. I don't know the answer because he wasn't free and clear. So I don't know the answer to that. Well, I would want it to still have the relationship. I just didn't want to be married.
You didn't want to get married, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, would I wanted to still be with him? Absolutely. Oh, sure, without question, without doubt. But I didn't want to be married. Anybody who reads the book will understand. You've read it. You understand why. But I was so affected by that. It was a brief marriage. It was 4 months marriage. But it affected me so that I really...
You were so young. You were so young. You were vulnerable to begin with. And it obviously, things have impacts.
Well,
it doesn't matter how long they are. Yeah.
No, it just affected me so that I just didn't want it. I was very much hurt by the man I married. I also hurt him. And
yes.
My problem...
And you're honest about that.
Yeah. My problem wasn't so much someone hurt me, that's why I don't want to be married. The situation was I didn't want to hurt anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's what
that obviously translated to your idea not to have a child too, right? You felt...
Well, there I didn't want to turn into my mother. I really didn't. I didn't want to look. I made mistakes in my life, but the only person who had to deal with the repercussions of those mistakes was me. It's totally unfair to have a child and make the child pay for my mistakes. That's not fair. And I felt strongly then. I feel strongly about that now. Child shouldn't pay for parents' mistakes. And I wasn't.
Where are you now in terms? Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, where do you see, now that you finished the book and you've had all this, I guess, was it cathartic to write it? It must have been difficult at certain points and joyous at other points to write it, I'm sure, remembering all these things and pouring your heart out.
I thought, you know, it wasn't so terrible. The gentleman who I was with had also been an editor, a journalist. In fact, he was editing. He died midway through my writing of it. But he was editing for me and became like a joint thing. And it also was a way of my sharing some of the things about me that he hadn't known. He'd known most of it, but not all of it. I expected it to be cathartic. It wasn't cathartic with a capital C. I don't know. I had to make a decision. Will I be honest? And the answer is, if I can't be honest, start.
Yeah.
And even I do give the name of the man involved. And I do that because he knew about it. I mean, we had discussed that many times. And he said, you have to. Because if you're going to be honest, you can't make me to be something I'm not or someone I'm not, because then when you're explaining how we met and all that, it's not going to be true.
Right. So, was his wife aware of the relationship, or you didn't know that?
I don't know. He said no. We were out. We were so public. We were out together. We traveled together. I don't mean to be cliche about this. If she didn't know, she was the only person on the planet who might have had some interest in it and didn't. His children knew. Two of his daughters, who are now grown-up adults, are very dear to me. And she also went her way, I gather. I didn't want to know the minutiae of their relationship. I knew a lot about it because after a certain amount of time, you learn things about somebody. But I didn't want to get involved in day to day. She said he never said to me, my wife doesn't understand me. You know, look, they married, they had four kids. You don't hate each other. I mean, you can grow to hate each other.
Some people do, yeah.
I've always been very grateful to her because I have him.
Yeah.
Because I have him. I mean, if they had such a wonderful relationship, we wouldn't have had any.
True. You're right.
I'm a pragmatist, among other things.
That's right. No, but you're right. That's true. I mean, obviously, if they had a great relationship, he would have looked elsewhere. You do go into it in some detail about his situation with his family, and clearly he cared about his family a lot, and he had a troubled daughter who had children, and he took in two children.
He was a very good man.
Interesting, and I do think it's interesting that if you get some blowback from people who are passing judgment, I just think that's again, it's your story, as you said. This is not a how-to book. You're not telling people to do it.
You're not giving
a blueprint for what people should.
I've learned when that part I had trouble writing, how honest to be, and then I just said, you know, I don't have to be defensive. This was a choice I made. I stand by that choice. I do not have to defend it. And if somebody finds it offensive or finds it, however they find it, they don't have to read the book. They don't have to be my friend. It's okay. That's all. It's really just okay. But
it's interesting that you reflect on, because in the book you talk about when you first decided to seek some psychological help and you went to a psychiatrist for a couple of years and you started out, I think you talk about when I got uncomfortable, I would lie.
Is that what you're supposed to do? Is that what you're supposed to do when you're in trouble?
Yeah, but it's not good in therapy. Usually, you don't do. It doesn't usually work if you lie. But okay.
Oh yes, you do.
Well, I think a lot of people do, but I don't think it helps you.
I realized I was wasting my money if I didn't start telling the truth.
But you obviously have come full circle since then, because you've decided it's time to be honest.
Well, it's
with yourself and apparently the world.
Right. And the world is not standing on its tippy toes waiting to hear from me. I mean, I have no illusions about my place in the world. But I do feel that there were certain, I've had people, friends of mine, and not people I didn't know well, read certain sections as I was writing them. And I would give them to someone who'd never been to Grossing's, or someone who didn't know me at a certain point in my life, to see how they would respond. And the responses I got were very emotionally rewarding, because people would say, I didn't have that experience, but I've had that feeling. I've had that kind of disappointment. I know what you're talking about. The childless by choice is, I've had some responses that is resonating with people. And that I find fascinating. I didn't write this because, I'm Tanya Grossinger and okay world, you know, here I am. nor was I writing to say, let me help you, darlings. None of that.
Right.
It's just that I do think that my experiences do have something of interest, perhaps, hopefully, very hopefully, among people who might not have, read a book like this. And sometimes when I can draw in experiences, I try to go behind the scenes with Playboy, behind the scenes with Betty Friedan. To say that Ayn Rand has a sense of humor, now that's a grabber.
That is a grabber. Well, you have an interesting encounter with Ayn Rand at the Playboy Club, too, which is very funny. I don't want to give all the anecdotes away because people won't have to read the book. But your experience with Hugh Hefner was fascinating, too. You worked as a PR person for them for several years. And
6 years.
What was the final blow while you got booted out the door? Can you want to share that one?
Well, because there was he was going out with a young woman. I mean, she wasn't underage, but he's going out with a woman who wouldn't go to bed with him. And so she lived in Southern California, and the first thing he did was to buy 24 hours of TV time to keep replaying this TV show he had called Playboy After Dark, and that didn't work. And then she introduced him to Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., and that didn't work. And then he said, I'll put you on the – he said, what do you really want? She said, I want to be on Johnny Carson's show. Now, I had been with Playboy for 6 years, and I had done some very fine work for them, which they acknowledged to me. But he really wanted to be with this girl, and this was the quid pro quo for him. So he had someone call me. He didn't call me directly, and I was told that he wanted to I should put her on the show. So I knew the people at the show. I was having a relationship with the associate producer. I knew how they think, how they thought. And I said, well, is she his girlfriend? No. Is she a fiancé? No. Does he want to marry her? No. Because I know the questions they'd be asking me. What does he want? He wants to get into her pants. Oh, good. I'm sure they'll love that. Well, I was then told, in effect, that – and meanwhile, I'm thinking, I had put Hefner on the Carson show a number of times, and he knew Johnny. They had a relationship. There is no reason in the world that Hefner could not call Johnny Carson personally and say, I'd like to put this person on. But he didn't. So I'm not stupid. And I'm saying, he doesn't want to be the fall guy. I'll be the fall guy. And that's exactly what happened. So I was the fall guy, and I lost my job.
That's a crazy reason to lose a job, but well, I mean, because we should explain it. You did a lot for, because in Playboy, to boost their image for their articles, they had all these interesting articles and profiles,
absolutely.
And those are the people that you would help, like Ayn Rand and Timothy Leary. You have a very intriguing story about Timothy Leary as well.
Yeah,
it was interesting because you were friendly with him up to a point, but you never would.
I was friendly with all of them, actually.
Yeah. But you didn't get involved in the. You wouldn't do LSD with him, though. He wanted to be your his.
No.
To guide you on a trip, and you didn't want any part of it because you actually witnessed something frightening, right?
Yep. But the point is that I had 6 very good years with Playboy. I met some wonderful people, and my next step, that's when I did PR for Chrissy Brown and Down All the Days and stuff, and that, in its own way led to my writing and to a career change and to a life change. I was never angry at Hefner for that. I thought it was stupid. I never thought he was stupid.
But
it was stupid. But I didn't. I got a job very quickly. It was a hell of an experience. It really was.
You definitely.
What you point out
in the book, I think you rolled with the punches very easily, or not necessarily easily, but you just did. He just said, maybe you said, I didn't have a choice, so you just did it.
Well,
and,
that's right. That's pretty much it. I didn't have a choice, but I knew, look, with my background, having worked for Hefner and done the launching of Betty Friedan's Feminine Mystique, I knew I'd get a job. I mean, that was never, I wasn't going to be out on the street.
Yeah.
So I figured, let's see what else happens. And then when my mother died a year and a half later, and I was traveling much more than I had, that suddenly the thought, I mean, I didn't grow up saying I want to be a travel writer, but then suddenly thought, gee, this could be interesting. And then growing up at Grossinger's came as a result of an article in the New York Times travel section called Growing Up at Grossinger's or Raised Without Reservations. Came out on a Sunday. Came out on a Sunday, and Friday I had 8 book offers.
Yeah.
So that opened up another world to me. If I'd been working for Playboy, this never would have happened.
And they weren't happy. The Grossinger family wasn't too thrilled with that book either, right?
I think that's an understatement.
But
listeners, if you knew about growing up at Grossinger's, if you knew about Grossinger's, all the good things I was afraid to put into growing up at Grossinger's because they'd kill me. Now they're not with us. So I put them into Memoir of an Independent Woman.
There you go. You see, the all good things come to those who wait, as they say, right? And
if
it's a pleasure.
If you live long enough.
If you live long enough. There's so many takeaways. Is there one ultimate takeaway you want people to come with from the book, or just that it's your personal story, and if we can get something out of it, great.
I think that there is something for everyone in this book, whether it's the famous people I've known, whether it's my rocky road to maturity at certain points, I think that I write with a I look at life with a sense of humor. I promise an easy, interesting read. I think you will put it down and wonder about me, and more to the point, wonder about yourself.
Yeah, very, very well said. It's a beautiful book. It really is very compelling. As you said, there's a lot of humor in it, a lot of warmth, a lot of self-revelation and insight. Tanya Grossinger, I wish you the best. The book is Memoir of an Independent Woman, An Unconventional Life Well Lived. It's out now, available. People can get it at the usual places, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can go to your website, TanyaGrossinger.com. And we thank you for joining us today. It has been a pleasure to have you here.
The pleasure is indeed mine. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. All right, stick around.
Yeah.
Got more on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show. Barkley Show here on BTR. Thanks again to Tanya Grossinger, a wonderful writer, fabulous book she's put out called Memoir of an Independent Woman, An Unconventional Life Well Lived. She had, among other things, a very special relationship with the great Jackie Robinson. We got a few minutes. Take a couple of calls, 347-857-4505. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi there. I just want to say it was a terrific show, and I'm going out to buy not only the one book, I'm going to buy both.
Okay, that's there we go.
She
we're someone books already, Tanya. There you
terrific.
Go.
I just loved it.
She's a fabulous woman. And it's a great the memoir is delicious. Yeah.
And what exactly is the name of the children's book, or you know, the so-called children's book that you wrote?
I think it's Jackie Robinson and Me, but I'm going to have to totally get. Go to her website, TanyaGrossinger.com. She has all of those there. So.
Okay, will do. But it was a great show, and thank you very much for having her on.
Well, she was a fabulous guest, and it's a very compelling read. I will tell you that. I
well,
thoroughly enjoyed it.
I'm looking forward to it, and I really was intrigued with the part about Jackie Robinson, because when I was much, much younger, I had the I did meet him, and he was a very warm individual, and I'm very anxious to, you know, read about her anecdotes with him.
Well,
so
yeah,
thanks
apparently
again.
A very special relationship. What was your experience like with Jackie Robinson? How did
well,
you meet him?
Well, we had him come to our school, I remember, but he was a very warm individual, not somebody that you would expect to be, and at that time he was, of course, a celebrity, you know, but
he was
wonderful with
famous.
The kids, and I mm-hmm. we remember him. I remember him as that.
Yeah, well, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like he forged a very special relationship with Tanya and knew what to say at the right time for her as a young girl, and certainly boosted her in a lot of ways, which is great. And that movie, have you seen the movie, 42? I forgot to ask Tanya about
no,
it.
No, I haven't, and I'm looking forward to seeing it, but it's supposed to be excellent.
It's a beautiful movie, it really is. And I think it was great to hear Rachel Robinson, Jackie's widow, talk about how much she enjoyed the movie and how she waited for a long time for it to be told in that way. So I'm sure the filmmakers are happy about that.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Thanks again,
so
Amy.
I'm
forward to hearing from you again.
Well, thanks for calling in, and thanks for, go out and read Tanya's book. I think you'll enjoy it.
Will do. And I'm going to read your book as well, your second one.
Yes,
I enjoyed
Dead
the
Silent.
First
You're
one,
right.
but
for
I'm,
mentioning
looking forward
it.
To re- I'm looking forward to reading Dead Silent.
I hope you enjoy that one, too. Please keep in touch, and you have a lot of reading to do.
Will do.
Thank you.
Again. Right.
I appreciate
bye-bye
it.
Now.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, we got another caller. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hello. Oh, hi, it's Mawa Mama.
Hi, Mawa Mama. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to say that can we adopt Tanya? She is like such a hoot. She would fit in with us. We could go to theater together. Like, I would love to, like, go and have lunch with her. She's, like, fabulous.
We could hang out with her. Absolutely. Yeah, she's great. She is great.
She's
well, maybe
so
she'll come back
funny
to
and wise. I got to read that book now.
You got to read it. Yeah, well, absolutely. I might have a copy. You can. Well, actually, go get your own.
Yeah, I'll get my own.
I'm trying to sell books. I'm hawking books for you, Tanya. Yeah, we'll have to invite her back so she can come on to the Coffee Clatch with us. And which we're going to be doing
yeah,
on Monday, by the way. Good segue into the promo. Monday, our post-Tony wrap-up Coffee Clatch at noon. So you'll have to watch the show.
I'm looking forward
Monday.
To that.
We'll be talking about all the winners, the losers, the performances, because, you know, the Tonys are usually akin with the Grammys. They come out, they pull out all the stops with the performances. And, of course, the fashions, which I know is your favorite, to get in touch with your inner Joan Rivers.
Yes, I will be doing that. It's not usually, the Tonys are not usually as bad in terms of having, like, really horror show outfits.
Fashion.
Although occasionally you have somebody come up and you're thinking, why are they wearing hot pants? Do you remember last year there was that woman? She came up. I think she was a costume designer or something, or a set designer.
On the Tonys? Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, on the Tonys.
I just remember Frances McDormand wearing a jean jacket. I didn't understand what that was about.
I guess she got a chill. Her stylist probably did not pick that out.
But, yeah, so this is a memo. You're on warning. Anybody who is walking the red carpet at the Tony Awards, Mawa Mama wants some big fashion mistakes. So she can talk about it on Monday.
I'll be looking for them, yeah.
So we'll try to see how that goes. Should be a fun show. They have some big shows this year, some big musicals, of course, which usually grab the performances. Pippin is the best revival nominee, and Matilda, of course, and Kinky Boots. So those are going to all have performances, I'm sure. And I think it's going to be fun. So we'll definitely be dishing that along with our infamous free flow pop culture convo. Say that one 5 times fast.
I'll let you do that.
We'll be joined by Chris Lucas. He's an actor and author who wrote a book called The Guide to Celebrity to Writing Celebrity Letters. So he will talk to us a little bit about the lost art. I guess people don't write fan mail anymore because everything is done
on Twitter
and Facebook and that kind of thing. Tweeting to your favorite, your favorite celebrity is not quite the same as writing an old-fashioned fan letter. So,
but if you write a fan letter, like do celebrities nowadays, do they even know what to do with it? They're so used to Twitter and, everything's in so many, short amount of characters.
We'll have to ask Chris if they still have, like, presidents of fan clubs and stuff that do that. I don't know. intriguing for sure. We'll have to see. So that's Monday at noon, or Monday shows at noon, so don't miss them. And by the way, you can always catch the podcast on demand as a podcast. And I'm told to remind people that not only can you follow me on Twitter and Facebook, but you can also follow me on Blog Talk Radio, because I just got a couple of new followers, and they say if you tell people to follow the show, they'll follow the show. It seems like there's a place to follow. Just follow me on Life. You know, they should have one consolidated Life site, you know, just to follow people. There are too many sites, don't you think?
Yeah. I was just actually going on the computer saying, what do you mean I got to follow you? How do I do that? Did I do it? I don't know.
I think
you're right. It's a little confusing.
There are too many sites, and there's Goodreads, which I am part of Goodreads, but I know I need to get more involved in that, because that's a big site for writers, and there's just so many sites. There's LinkedIn, there's Goodreads, there's Twitter, there's Facebook. I'm very big on Facebook and Twitter, and the others not so much. I'm on them, but I don't have enough hours in the day to attend to all these accounts.
Right.
It's crazy. So I think maybe there should be one consolidated Life site. Just follow the whole thing.
Well, there's something to invent there. Consolidate the different sites into one. What should we call it?
I don't know. We'll have to work on that. When people consolidate their bills, we could consolidate our social media presence.
There you go. There's a need for it. You find your need.
It's crazy, and they always tell you, you know, for security purposes, don't use the same password on all the different sites. I'm like, oh my God, how many passwords can I remember?
I actually have to keep it in a little book, because I can't keep track of them all. So if somebody finds the book hidden in my house somewhere, they would know all my passwords. But don't tell anybody, you know, because this is just between me, you, and everybody else who's listening.
I was going to say, it may be out, the story may be out now. I don't know.
Cat might be out of the bag.
Cat, meet bag.
Yeah. Come back here, Cat. Get in the bag.
Oi.
Yeah.
As I say, oi.
I'm not on the security
council.
Yeah, can't wait. Can't wait for Monday. I'll be here.
Anyway. You will be here, absolutely, and we'll talk. We have a little thing going on the weekend, maybe, hopefully, weather permitting.
Mm-hmm. No flooding, hopefully.
No flooding, man. Billy, and for everybody, please be careful. I know the East Coast is getting hit hardest now with this first tropical storm, I guess, of the season, early this year, Andrea, and all the other crazy weather that other parts of the country have faced. Please, folks, take it easy. Be advised. All right, Mawa Mama, I appreciate it. We will have a great weekend. We're going to talk, obviously,
you
before
too.
Then, and I will see you on Monday right here.
Yeah.
Our host, Tony, wrap-up coffee clutch.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too. And for the journal challengers, we don't have a lot of time, but I do want to get to the prompt. I promised you, as folks said, you know the journal challenge. If you're not doing it, get yourself an old-fashioned notebook, the old pen and paper kind, and just write 30 minutes in the morning and or 30 minutes in the evening and sort of get in touch with your inner Virginia Woolf, see what happens. People joining every week, we get new folks. Claire out in, New York City, one of the local ones, has said she's just joined, which is great. But a few folks said, hey, give us a prompt like you do in your workshop, playing with artistic blocks. So each week, if I have time, I'm going to give you a prompt that you can use or discard as you see fit, because what we do is we just write based on whatever comes into our heads, and I'll just give you a little starting off point. So this week, it could be easy, could be hard, depends on how you look at it. Ready? Something's burning. That's it. Do with it what you will. Thanks to the gang at TCS. A little glitch, but not too much. Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. Always a pleasure. Coffee Clatch coming up on Monday, post-Tony wrap-up. Next Friday at 1, we will be talking with fellow mystery writer Stephen Kaminsky. He is the author of It Takes Two to Strangle. It's the first of the Damon Lazard Dabbling Detective Series. Uh-oh. I see a glint in Trudy's eye. She's getting ready to unveil that special song that we play when mystery writers come out. Didn't we say every other mystery writer? We'll see. We'll see how it goes, as they say. All right. Do I have another song to play? Or are we going to play something else, right? All right. Yeah, here we go. This is another little song I thought would be pretty as we wrap up Tanya Grossinger's visit. Again, thanks so much, Tanya Grossinger, a wonderful book, memoir of an independent woman, an unconventional life, well lived. It is a big title, but it's worth tasting, that's for sure. Very nice book. I thought this song would be fitting. It's a beauty from Nancy Griffith called Late Night Grand Hotel. Hey, whatever you do, wherever you go this week, please do drive safe, play nice, and dream big. We'll talk next time on the Amy Beth Arkowe Show. Stop by the website always, amybetharkowe.com. You can find me on Twitter at AB Writes, or look me up at Facebook or on the Blog Talk site. And follow me everywhere. Have a good one.
Watching this evening fire burn away my tears. All my life I've left my troubles by the door, 'cause leaving is over.